But the way actually we're storing it is we weren't storing it as the value. We were storing it as the percent complete on a scale from 0 to 255. Right. But as, but as a
Butterscotch
Shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 266 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm a hideous monkey.
I'm Sam, and I'm vacationing again.
And this is a... This is a show where we talk about life, business, and vacation. Today is July 1th, 20 Blundy. Before we get started, we have a warning. We're going to swear. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a bunch of them.
Good, as we should.
Who left us some, dare I say, dank messages.
Mm. Here we go. I haven't heard of dank anything in quite some time.
Things have gotten dank lately.
How many dabs are they doing?
Six dabs, two yeets, and one dank.
I think there's conversion rate. If you do some stoichiometry on it, you convert metrics. You know,
cancel out those units.
Stoic those danks. Okay, so we got a message from David who says, "Thank you." It's like
sarcastic?
Like a long thing.
Oh, okay,
it sounded sarcastic.
It's kind of sarcastic. He's like, "Thank you for making games that are a brief escape from reality, even for non-hardcore gamer types like me."
Oh.
We got a note from Tim Conceivable who says, "I figure I owe you all a coffee since I've spent thousands of hours playing Levelhead and listening to the podcast. So I wanted to bring my contribution up from about one penny to two. Thanks for the many hours of entertainment and inspiration."
You do it, doing God's work, Tim. It's great.
That's right. We also got one from Igor Bulbus who says, who says, "Puff slap a hoplongy here."
Ooh.
Wanted to say thanks for answering my animation question in episode 264. I kept my rumpus name, by the way, after re-rolling a few times. I love that feature. It's a good one. It's a good feature.
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
and of course, we have a bunch of recurring supporters who we'd like to thank as well.
People may not remember, but when we first released the random namer, that was your only option. You remember this?
You just got a random name. You couldn't re-roll it. And
no, you could re-roll it. You were allowed to re-roll it, but you weren't allowed to make your own name.
Mm, yeah.
So you just – I think we had like a 24-hour cooldown timer on the re-roll. So that was the only way you got named, but we had some violent responses to that feature. So –
You know, if we just hadn't checked Twitter, we wouldn't have known.
That's true.
And it would have been fine. Let's talk about life. For starters, we need to talk about the three body problem.
What about cats?
I think you're talking about the trilogy, which is very good, but unrelated. Three body problem of cats. So here's the deal: we have an old cat. Her name's New Cat.
Yeah.
She's not that new, but we ran out of name ideas, and then it kind of stuck.
She was new.
Yeah. So I've had her for like 11 years, I want to say. I think she's about 12. So she's a decently old cat. Her buddy died a couple years ago, our other cat. And so she's just been a lone kitty, you know, for a while. And she seems to be largely doesn't give a shit about that fact. But we still kind of felt bad. We were like, she needs a buddy so that when we're like, if we have to go somewhere, whatever, there's another creature around. So we went and got our cat, which we've already talked about more recently. We got a kitten a few months ago named Ori after, you know, Ori in the Blind Forest. And that little fucker is a maniac. So he he was like 6 months old when we got him and has infinite energy. He's a super nice cat, but he has infinite energy and he wants to play with New Cat. And she is not interested in the slightest. And so – our house has been filled with growling and cat screaming and, you know, all that stuff now.
So you were like, New Cat's sad. We need to – let's solve this problem. Get an energetic whippersnapper in here. New Cat's actually that person who's like, get off of my lawn, yes. You chosh.
New Cat is sort of a Ron Swanson of cats.
Yes, she is not pleased. So we've been trying to figure out – we've been like doing separation stuff. We've been trying all kinds of stuff to get them to chill. And it's gotten like – it's been slowly, very slowly, just kind of getting a little more manageable. But it's still just a general problem. So the recurring thing though, every time we Google around for this again, when we get fed up, we're like, there has to be a fucking way to solve this, right? The recurring solution is that if you have a little young asshole cat that won't quit bothering an old cat that doesn't want to do anything, you just get another one. You get another young asshole cat. Which, so my wife has been has brought this to my attention. This is like the standard approach, like literally, I think 2 months ago at this point. And I was like, this seems like we're getting ourselves into a deeper hole, you know, because
this seems exactly. You're in a pickle now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if that doesn't work, it seems to me that things are now literally twice as bad. You know,
This is literally a two wrongs making a right situation.
Yeah. Sort of, and, you know, and so I've been very resistant to this idea. But it's become increasingly clear that the solutions that we've been working on are just not, they're just not going to do it. And the otherwise our only fallback is just to wait until this fucking kitten is old enough that he doesn't want to play so much anymore, which takes years. So, you know, that's not that
it may great never fallback. Happen.
It may never happen. So, so now we are beginning the process of trying to find a new kitten with the, and again, everybody we've talked to everywhere on the internet says most of the time, this is the exact right and only move, in fact, you have available. And most of the time it works out great because the cats would rather harass other cats who also want to be harassed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if given a choice between a cat that's going to growl at them and slap them in the face and one that's going to play back, that they're going to choose that. So this is the theory. Yeah. This is the theory. But so far, Ori does not seem to give a shit that new cat punches him in the face and growls at him. So he seems to be completely unfazed.
As the other option is that second cat, or I guess third cat, comes in. Yeah. You call them third cat at this point. You say third cat comes in and sees Ori also just going at new cat and then just decides like,
This is what playing is, I guess.
This is how things are done in this house.
The culture of the house. Yes, I must partake.
It'd be a good guess. I will also harass this old cat.
So I'm very this seems to be our only move, but of course once you adopt a pet, like this is your problem now. So if we adopt a yet another one, and then that turns into a problem, a bigger problem, then at that point, I think we just have to basically start changing our house, you know, like adding some doors and then so that we could keep things like just everybody separate. Because the other thing too is like, what if the two kittens don't get along? Now we have it's even worse than twice as bad. Now it's combinatorially worse because now it's a 3x2. Now it's 6 times as bad. So
be careful. Anyway. Solving your cat problem with more cat problems. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know about this.
Yeah, the thing is, like, it's apparently the only viable solution, but the costs of it not working out. The costs of the edge case are very high.
Sounds to me like a conspiracy by pet shelters.
By Big Cat.
Yeah, Big Cat is coming in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trying to get you to more cats.
Having looked at a bunch of pictures of kittens, I am very excited about having another kitten in the
house. There are worse things to choose to ruin your life with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and extra cats?
We're in quarantine. Like, I'm going to be in my house for the next year and a half or whatever. So we've got a whole bunch of time to figure out how to resolve this shit.
That's pretty optimistic, Adam, based on current trends.
That's true. Maybe.
But okay, so you're gonna do an old woman who swallowed a fly.
Yep.
Move.
We are.
And you're just gonna keep bringing in invasive species.
Just keep adding cats until they all get along. I'm sure, it's gonna work out just fine.
Till eventually, you have so many cats that they can't even find each other in the pile, and then everything works out.
Yep.
All right. Now I need to talk about laser towers.
What is because this? It's, you mentioned this before because, the podcast started, and I was like, what?
Okay. Corsair.
I don't know.
Unveiled.
What's Corsair?
The company that makes my glowing keyboard.
They make RAM and cooling elements.
It's a laser power supplies. A laser computer tower.
Yeah, they're all PCs. Okay. Custom PCs.
Got it.
If you're one of those like build your own PC fools like myself, you got to have a couple of Corsair peripherals floating around.
Mm-hmm. That's a mouse and a keyboard, correct?
It could be anything. They got like headsets or you know, anything that plugs in your computer, I think, is a peripheral, right? Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Because it's on the periphery of the thing.
Yep, yep.
So Corsair's got these new things called – it's called the – let me get the full name. The IQ LT100 Smart Lighting Tower. So it's literally – it sits on your desk like a speaker, but it's just a tower of 90 LEDs. Okay. Okay.
It sits there. The gamer in me is already purchasing.
You're like, this must make
money. Where I can press the button to get it.
Okay. So what you do is you get two of these towers. You put them side. Yeah, you get two of them. You put them side by side.
You need symmetry. You know, you got to have that symmetry.
Okay.
You got to have symmetry. And you can either point them, you know, toward yourself if you really want to kind of just burn your retinas off.
Okay.
Or you can go ahead and point them back toward the wall, and they can hook up to your GPU, basically, your graphics card, and they can process what's happening on your monitor and create bias lighting behind. So it creates like just a fucking cool ambiance. And you can put a little thing on there and turn it into a little headphone stand so you can rack your headphones on there. So I'm going to get – I mean, I got it.
You know what?
Get your laser tower. It's a pandemic. You got to make your home into a circus.
Yeah. I'm going to be stuck in this house for 16 years. and you know, I'm going to treat myself. So some people end up sort of creating a ball pit of cats, and I'm going to –
make a ball sort pit of LEDs.
I'm just going to blind the whole neighborhood with my giant laser.
Yeah, this will actually be helpful because then when Christmas comes around and you need to light up your house, you just are already ready to go.
I am already ready.
Yeah,
I already did. I mean, I already have a giant LED strip. I can't believe how cheap LED strips are. For like $20, you can get like a 10-meter long LED strip. Mm-hmm. and it'll have like a little, you know, control thing
dial on there.
It'll come with double-sided tape, and so we already have one in our living room because it's kind of dark in our living room, and we were like, what can we do to, you know, just give a better mood to this room? So we got a 10-meter long LED strip and just ran it along the runners on the floor around the edge of the room, and now there's just like – the room is just kind of slowly shifting hues. You know, and it's just like,
remember growing up as kids, we were always like, especially as young kids, we wanted to have our bedrooms have like lava lamps and like glow stickers on the lava ceiling lamps. and like those balls that shoot like pink light and like all this shit, yep. Right? And we were just like, we were all into having that kind of stuff. And then for some reason, as we got into adulthood, we were like, you know what kind of a bedroom we want is we want to get some nice beige walls. And we want to get
beige is too much of a stance. Go with taupe.
To get some taupe. I want to get some bedside lamps that are pretty dim because we don't want to hurt our eyes while we're there. Shifting towards red, but like not actually red because that would be ridiculous.
That's too much.
That's too much personality.
So you just have like your bedroom is now kind of the dark, quiet, boring room for you to be bored enough that you fall asleep, right? Versus what it used to be. Like when we were kids, you're just like, yeah, this is the place you go to. And you're like, you read in there and you got like stars shooting on the ceiling and all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's what we need to get
back
to.
That's what you need.
Get some fucking lava lamps. Why the hell not?
Dude, so the only point of these things is to glow.
I love
it. Hook up to your computer and then they glow. And I'm getting them.
Get them. I think as far as the time to enjoy a zany, you know, purchase that literally adds vibrancy to your life, now is the time. Uh-huh. So you get, and then I expect a 1-star review after you get it working. So we need to figure out.
Yes. Speaking of 1-star, I did try to find some reviews, but they're so new that I couldn't find any. But I'm expecting to see some great 1-star reviews. a bunch of members of our Discord community were inventing their own 1-star reviews in response to our discussion on the podcast a little while back about how 1-star reviews are almost always incoherently stupid and rarely about the actual thing.
There's something around the thing, around the experience of the thing that has nothing to do with the product.
Yeah. So we got some great ones here. We're gonna read some snippets of our community's invented 1-star reviews. Yes. So Bam182 says, bought some cashews, but I ate too many. Gave me chapped lips. One star. Tom, Ronin Game Dev, says, bought a new board game to play with my friends. Played 7 times. We had fun, but I didn't win.
That was excellent. Very good.
Yeah.
Yep.
That feels spot on.
And then the last one's from Kevin, who says, built one of those Labo kits with my sister. Now she won't let me play it. 1-star. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Classic. How come they didn't control for that? You know? What's that about?
Yep. Clearly a defective product.
Yep.
If your sister can just use it. You know what I mean?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And also, we need to talk about, before we talk about studio news, we need to talk about a little game called Monster Train.
Well, I'll give it a 1-star review, which is
because you've been playing it a lot, probably too much.
Yeah, so I'll say Monster Train. Played it for 15 hours over the course of 2 days. It was so fun that my pupils were super dilated afterwards, as if I was on drugs and I couldn't see.
Your pupils were dilated.
My pupils. Yeah, they were dilated.
So, yeah, 1-star.
Yeah, 1-star. I can't see after I play this game because I'm having such a good time that my brain's just overridden with dopamine. You know, it's too much. I can't deal with it.
Had too good of a time. 1-star.
So, yeah, Monster Train. I do want to talk about it. This game came out on Steam a little while ago. It's an early access. And if you like games like Slay the Spire, which we've talked about a little bit in the podcast, these deck building roguelike experiences. It's that sort of an experience, a different one. You know, thankfully, it's not just a clone or something like that. But they do a bunch of things differently, and by God, it is a good time. So if you're looking for something to do, I think it's on sale still for the summer sale. Probably will be actually still through the next podcast coming out. So check it out because it's very fun, and just be prepared. It's one of those games where when you start playing it, it will suddenly shift 12 hours in time. So just be aware. It's one of those.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, we're taking a 4-day weekend for 4th of July. So I'm going to be using, I think, all 4 days.
Yeah, you can be careful. This way, you got to know when to start one of these. Yeah. Because if you start it tonight, that's what you're doing for vacation now. So, be careful.
Yeah. I may actually start it on the last day of vacation. Mm-hmm. Just to put a hard cap on the thing. Yep. And actually, so it's weird because it does to me kind of speak to the importance of getting a diversity of experience because Sam, you hadn't played this game. It's a card game roguelike monster battle-y thing. Yes. And all of a sudden it forced us to rethink a bunch of things about the Crashlands 2 crafting system that we are conceiving of.
Yeah.
Right. Because it actually has nothing really like at the end of the day, it has nothing to do with Monster Train, but just some of the aspects of deck building and stuff ended up just sort creeping of sparking some inspiration of how to think about crafting.
Yeah.
So it's just, you always got to just let the chaos in. You know?
Absolutely.
Do some new things.
You know, like as we're in pre-production, basically on the design side for Crashlands 2 right now, I honestly think that one of the best things you can do if you're actively designing something is to, in your evenings, be playing – just to be playing other things or in your off time, to be purposely moving – if you normally read a bunch or normally play music or whatever, take some time to actually just do gaming while you're doing it because it starts – this whole cross-pollination thing is really where a lot of the magic is for having these – design breakthroughs that can really end up making new systems and helping you solve problems in good ways, which is basically what happens. So.
Well, yeah, creativity is just blending things.
So always blending.
So you just need more things in your blender. So what we've been working on in the studio for this past week is we're still in the midst of, as we've come to call it, as of right now, tech debt burn down rodeo circus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're still in the process of porting Rumpus into Crashlands, which is going to open up a whole bunch of great avenues. Like if we wanted to, we could then have Crashlands on the Xbox. We haven't even gone down that road, but this opens up the possibility for us to easily port it. Mm-hmm. And it brings all of the Crashlands perks into Rumpus. It basically just hooks everything up to all of our new web tech. So we can burn down Beastcatch ID and be done with it. And there's been some really fun and stupid lessons that have come out of seeing the code that we wrote, I guess now
anywhere between – that game started in 2013. So
my code editor has a nice tool called Git Blame. Git being the thing that's storing versioning information of the code that's been written and then blame being like who's responsible for this, right?
Yeah.
Where every line of code, I can just hover over it and it'll tell me – when the last time it was edited and by whom, right? And of course, for my cut, it's always me. But I had something open yesterday, and I was like, "What is this doing?" And I hovered over it, and it was like last edited 5 years ago.
Whoa!
So that's some old. That's some we got old some oldies code. In there. Yeah.
So back in the day, We had a couple of philosophies for Biscotch ID, mm-hmm. which at the outset, they sound reasonable. They sound good.
They were born of sort of a partial understanding of how a whole bunch of things work.
Yeah. And now that we have a slightly better understanding.
Slightly less partial or more partial?
More complete.
More complete.
definitely not complete, but more complete. So I think the two core ones that I want to just like hit on as being stupid examples of what we did. One was the idea of security through aggressive obfuscation. By that I mean nothing in Biscotch ID, like none of the data, none of the files it generates, none of the output or inputs are human readable.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is scrambled, encrypted, encoded, flipped around. You know, it's funny. Salted.
I remember when we were doing this, because I remember how much glee both of you had when you were coming up with these mechanisms. Because it was hilarious. Because you were like,
"Oh yeah, it was very fun."
we're like nobody's gonna get.
You're gonna add this to it. Flip it, turn it upside down, shake it up in a jar, add an olive to it. Right?
The idea was the only way you could figure out how to generate like CrashLens data would be if you got a hold of the source code and then read what the code was doing. Because
except people can already do that, you know, because it's a game maker game.
Yep.
And there's shit out there you can use to deconstruct it. So like,
but at the time, we didn't know that.
We didn't know that. So what ends up happening then? Is as we are porting data to CrashLens,
we gotta find that data,
figure out what it is, and we gotta turn it back into something we can understand, and then convert it into mm-hmm. Rumpus compatible data. And it's been a nightmare because we can't read it.
You guys did a very good job. You're very thorough with your obfuscation.
Yeah. So that's been an interesting bummer, but I think it just comes down to like maybe things being human readable isn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can probably secure things through other means, as opposed to things being secured. Yeah, as opposed to just making them completely incoherent.
Well, this is one of the things that you see in computer security stuff is that you should never be using security through obscurity, meaning just like. You fuck with the thing so it's hard to figure out what's going on. That's mm-hmm. your security process, right? And any good security person will tell you this is the worst way to do it. However, being now on the other side of having done it to ourselves, I got to say, pretty fucking effective.
It worked pretty good.
But that's the key.
Because we can't get in there.
Yeah.
But it's all about incentives and how high incentives are, right? This is where the question comes in. Because if you're managing, you know, bank infrastructure,
right?
Then, yeah. The obscurity is way too ineffective because people have very high incentive to break into that shit. If you have a indie, you know, single player game that it doesn't even matter if somebody cheats anyway, and so on, maybe it doesn't matter so much.
Who gives a shit?
So the incentive is now really low. So if you combine a low incentive with security through obscurity, pretty fucking effective.
Yeah. So,
but
so
terrible for your future self.
Yes.
So the other thing that I just want to quickly touch on is this idea we had about server load, because we were like, hey, you're gonna store, we got perks, we got achievements, we got stats, we got all these
all things. Sorts of data, just
all sorts
around.
Of data, and we want to make sure that it's really, really small so that we hardly have to pay anything for storing and moving that data around. And so we made it as small as possible, which is 1 byte. So any of your like stats or whatever in CrashLens that are stored in a byte. Each stat is 1 byte.
Many of all of your perks.
Problem with a byte. Yeah, all of your perks. Yeah. So the problem with a byte is that it only goes up to 255.
So a byte is actually, just for people who aren't familiar, right? It's a number actually that goes from 0 to 255, right?
It's a binary number made up out of 8 bits, meaning 8 zeros or 1s in combination.
And as far as how big that can end up getting, it has 255.
Yeah, there's 256 possible values.
Yeah, but you start at 0 because you're a programmer.
So, mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So you go 0 to 255. Those are your options. And the problem with this is in CrashLens, we have perks that go very high, like build 10,000 floors or whatever, right?
So how do you convert that into 256?
Right. So CrashLens has this extremely elaborate system of like of basically chunking these things up into intervals so that, for example, if something has a goal of 10,000, then we actually break it up into 100 mini goals of 100, and we track each mini goal and then like layer them out and send them in chunks. And this was all because we wanted to store one, because if we did 2 bytes, we could go all the way up to 65,000, right?
Like, we can't do,
which still wasn't enough for everything, because then we have
still wasn't enough, but hey, we could do 4 bytes and go up to 2 billion, and now we're pretty much square.
But the way were storing it is, we weren't storing it as the value, we were storing it as the percent complete on a scale from 0 to 255, right? But as to use that as percent complete. So
it's funny because it's like
even things that are like out of one, because a lot of things are just like true or false, right? But the true or false is now it just becomes 255 the moment you actually do it,
right?
And that's how we store a true, right? And that's also why we didn't. So on the one hand, we didn't have to compute all those bars that you see when if you open up the old Beast Country D landing page, because all those bars, it's just we just make it effectively 255 long is, you know, in effect, right? And then you just put the bar, because it's already in percentage. It's already ready to go.
This feels like a really good example of really intensely doing something very incorrectly, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is like the Dunning-Kruger curve combined with premature optimization.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Which is like we decided like we're only going to store 1 byte per
person. We also didn't know how much web resources cost. Because I will say, the result of all of this stuff is that across all of our games, at peak, like the week of Crashlands launch, when we had like, was it 200,000 people or 300,000 people buy the game or something and play it, mm-hmm. Our peak month, our server costs were $80.
Right? I mean, it worked.
And it's been like $20 a month ever since. But here's the hilarious part. The hilarious part is nowadays, like, so we've talked with our level head players about the fact that the average level size and level head is only a couple of kilobytes, right? And we're able to compress it, and we can send it to the server like as pure binary, and it's just very slick and good. But with Crashlands, we didn't know how to do that. And so your saves in Crashlands are sent in this basically exploded format that's actually dramatically bigger than your save is. And those saves – those saves are probably the size of like 30 level head levels.
Yeah. Okay. I think on average, if you played for like a few hours, I think you have like a 10 kilobyte.
Yeah. So like over, so over here on one side, we're like, oh yeah, 1 byte per perk. And then your save is like the equivalent of 100,000 perks. And right. So we built all these systems to keep those perks at 1 byte. And then when we needed to upload your save, we're just like, I don't know, fuck it. And we
I
just
don't know. Send 100, make 000. It 100 times bigger. Yeah.
Make it 100,000 times bigger.
Yeah. We just knew too little about a handful of things.
But here's the thing. It all worked and it all still works. It's just vaguely incoherent. And now we have to – you know,
well, the save files themselves are really cleverly put together, actually. Like, if you get into the guts of how they're assembled and stuff, except that they're also unnecessarily split into 3 files that we then have to keep stitching back together. And then, like, each one of those sort of subfiles that we need, like, additional checks on to make sure that nothing has been corrupted and stuff. And we also have a backup system, every time you make a save, a backup gets made. And then if you load a save and it fails, it tries to use the backup. But there's nothing preventing, apparently – there's nothing preventing a corrupted save from being then backed saved up as a backup.
so we've had like one or two cases. Now, this is pretty rare because, you know, we've had millions of people play Crashlands by now. But we've had a couple of scenarios where people got a corrupted save because, like, I think somehow, like, in the exact moment the game was saving, their battery died or something on their laptop or whatever. And then somehow the game managed to fuck up a save and also back up a broken save. So then when they tried to open the game, it can't load the save. It's and then ruined. the backup is also corrupted. So we just
– Well, so this is why we call it a rodeo circus, because it's like there's just a lot.
We're trying to wrangle things, but Yeah, we're basically clowns.
It's been very interesting.
It's been super fun though. I mean, I think this is basically what our July is going to be: is going through all the old games, trying to get Rumpus in there, ripping Beastcatch ID out, you know, doing all this stuff. But we're learning a lot. And the core lesson I want to just sort of bring to our podcast listeners is: be kind to your future self. Future you is a collaborator on every project that you work on. And if you say to yourself as you're building something like, well, I don't really need to write out a full name for this variable because I know what it means
right now.
That's only – yeah. Always append "for now" at the end of all those statements, because you just 5 years from now, you're not going to remember. And so actually so much of my work in getting CrashLens up to speed has been in renaming things. Like basically I'll see something and I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I have to spend 20 minutes sort of weaving my way through the code to see what that thing is doing. And then I can rename it something that's actually, you know, that correct. Somebody could see and right. know what it's doing. So it's just always a good thing to know. Whenever you're setting something up, just take the time to ask, like, if somebody else came in and needed to just pick up and go with this thing, could they do it? Because that's going to be you later. Mm-hmm. So, yep. Okay. So I think that's all we wanted to talk about for studio news. It's been a fun week. Actually, no, there's one final thing, which is kind of an interesting production note that we've seen, which is that we've gotten this weird advantage of being able to do some parallel processing right now because right now, so we basically have Sam as the art and design team and marketing, right? We've got Sampada on business, Shure on deployments, Jordan on QA. I do game programming. Adam does web programming, right? And we had this kind of issue as we were nearing the end of Levelhead production, which was this like this growing and shrinking needs of different divisions mm-hmm. of the studio. Because, for example, leading up to launch, a lot of marketing needs to happen. And right now we're in this weird tech debt burn down rodeo circus, which is very heavy on the programming side, but has absolutely no art needs. Mm-hmm. Just
more
none,
design
right?
needs, because I can't help you solve past yeah. use problems.
No one can.
Yeah. And so we kind of had this conundrum that I think a lot of game studios have. And what the really big studios do in this time is they just fire people, right? They're like, well, we don't need the entire art team for now, so get out of here. And then they'll rehire them in 6 months or whatever. And so
– this is also why you see art houses have actually risen up in the last 10 years in particular, I think, as games have gotten bigger, because the total art volume you need gets more and more tremendous.
Then all of a sudden you don't.
Yeah, that's just gone. And so being able
actually, you see this with programming houses too. I can't even count the number of unsolicited requests I'm getting from these companies to shore up our ability to program in Unity. With all their programmers.
Yep. Yeah. So it's definitely a thing that the industry has responded to by actually creating essentially departments that are their own businesses, right? So that instead of the whole, you know, you as an individual getting fired, you just work as a programmer inside of this entity that does games programming, and then you get contracts on a continuous basis, which is cool.
Yeah. So what we've been able to do then is during Tech Debt Burndown Rodeo Circus month, Sam has been moving forward on all kinds of pre-production for CrashLands 2. And this has given us a really interesting angle on thinking about what this game is going to be, because it has time to breathe. So, So Sam's coming up with all these cool designs and sketching things and coming up with UIs and talking through game systems and stuff. And then it's basically like maybe two or three times a week, probably we get together and just talk through the current understanding of what CrashLands 2 is going to be. Mm-hmm. Right. And every single time we realize something. You know, yeah. We're like, oh, actually, no, this seemed cool. But now that we see it like all specced out, actually, this isn't going to work. We need to pivot it this way or whatever. And previously, because we never have done pre-production before, previously, that would have been a game system that was already programmed.
Yes.
Right? And then we would look at it and be like, oh, actually, this isn't working. And then we'd have to figure out how to rip that out of the game code. Mm-hmm. So what I'm excited about, and I don't know how you feel about this, Sam, but it seems like this is going to allow us to get a lot of the false starts out of the way early.
100%.
And in a cheap way.
Yeah, in a really cheap way. And I think part of it is
the idea phase.
Yeah, part of it is I think we never – one is we never gave ourselves the time. And I think part of it comes down to that the issue of the sort of feeding the beast problem, which is, you know, if you have a games programmer but nothing else for the games programmer to do in particular, or that it seems like they should be doing, it's very tempting to just have them start programming exactly whatever the current design idea is. But really the goal of something like pre-production, I guess, because I used to sort of – it's the same thing with sketching. Like I used to think it was dumb, right? Because I was like, why would you waste all the time thinking about it? You know, not realizing what it's doing, which is the whole goal is to answer questions in the cheapest way possible.
The goal is to be kind to your future
self. Exactly, which is done by thinking about it, done by simulating it, done by sketching stuff. And so – yeah, it's been weird, I think, because it just so happens that because of my role on in the team, where it's this combination of the art design and the marketing side, it makes it super – like a super good sort of a crossover point for doing a lot of this pre-production work because, you know, whether – like I did this little business assumptions report, you know, brought that in, did a review of all of our previous reviews for the game to find – like make sure we know exactly what to keep, what to throw out. And then, you know, do some sketches about UIs, whatever else. And so I'm really excited. I think it's going to allow us to hit the ground running in a really important way where we're not just building things to see what is even happening, but actually have an idea of what's happening and then build to suit.
Build that.
Yeah. And I think the time thing is interesting because I remember this was probably 5 years ago. I think it was right before Crashlands came out. I had shown the game to my mentor. And he was like, this is really good. It's really cool. And then he stopped and he was like, what do you think would happen if you took your time making something? And I was like, what do you mean? And I think literally up until it started happening at Levelhead, actually. So Levelhead was, you know, the first time I started slowing down, actually enjoying the art process and stuff. But yeah, I was confused because I was like, you don't get to take time. Like who has,
yeah, come on,
who has
it's all about luxury? Speed. It's all about just deciding that you're going to use a single byte to store something, and then whatever happens after that,
you just deal with it, buddy. Yeah, not realizing, of course, that what he was more or less saying was that yeah, you're not necessarily actually saving time by thrashing about so quickly. And so,
and we've talked about this in the past. I mean, this was part of my Designed by Chaos GDC talk. We talked about some of these things in the past of almost every system in Crashlands went through three full rebuilds, mm-hmm. you know, because it just wasn't working in the context of the game and we just had to rip it out. So
yeah,
so this is going to be a huge time saver. Very excited about it. And it's also just given us that nice, because we have so much tech debt to dig out of, then we just have a forced amount of time. Mm-hmm. We're like, we just have to let Crashlands 2 designs sort of percolate. And that's just what's going to happen now. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to say anything about what we're thinking yet because, of course, it's still evolving. But there's some real cool shit in there.
Oh, yeah, I'm stoked.
Real cool. Good. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. Highest upvoted question comes from Quantum Anomaly. The soundtrack to Levelhead is one of my favorite things to listen to. Fat Bard has outdone themselves. Any chance we can get a behind the soundtrack interview with the Marvelous Bards sometime? I would love to hear their thoughts on what it's like to collaborate with the Beescotch crew and how the soundtrack came to be, especially the last remix track. Much love to everyone involved with Levelhead. Mm. Maybe?
Well, they did a live hangout, didn't they? Like last week?
Yeah,
that's true. They did.
It was a while ago.
So it's possible that this question was asked before that. Or it was after and you missed it, but either way.
Either way, it has happened. But also I know so Patrick, I think, is in the Discord, so he's around. So Patrick being one half of Fat Bard. Pat Bard. But I mean, they're around and they're on Twitter. It's like if it's a thing that you want, I'm sure you could make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just start pinging them and just say, hey, I need you to
give
me all of your time. Just make this happen.
Yeah, and honestly, I think we would be the wrong people to interview
100% them about because we know jack shit about any of it.
That's why we pay them, you know? But like whenever we go see – there are times where like we go do recordings for voiceovers for trailers and stuff like that. And man, seeing Patrick work the software of – I don't even know what it's called. But the software, you know.
The software. His like 15-year-old software running on XP, at least the last time I saw it.
Yeah. And man, he just slices and dices that thing. It's just like boom, 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 and instantly – he's recreated some sound or like fused two halves of sentences together to make a perfectly fine sounding.
Yeah, I don't get that. Hybrid. That's the part where Moe's like, hey, what? Because he's
– it's magic.
Yeah. I just don't get it.
Yeah. It's very cool seeing an expert at work. However, I have no idea how he's doing or what he's doing or why he's doing it. So,
yeah.
Okay. So we just had an audio – train wreck, but I think we recovered the first parts of the episode. We're back on track. Everything's back to normal. Don't worry about it.
So, everything's fine. My computer just suddenly stopped working and then suddenly turned itself off.
But 2020, baby.
Fortunately, Audacity, which I didn't even know, takes little snapshots as you're going. So I only lost like the last 5 minutes or something. Yeah, those were obviously the best 5 minutes of the whole episode. So
I guess. Lost to time.
Yeah, lost to time.
Oh, they were so good. Yeah. They were such a good 5 minutes. But anyways, I think the moral of the story for this question was Fat Bard are tremendous experts in what they do. We have no idea what happens when they're working on things. And so if you want to know some things, you can just ask them in Discord and they'll help you out. All right. Next question comes from Happy Yearbly, who says, what advice would you have for people wanting to transition into full-time indie dev?
First advice, don't. But second advice, let's assume you're going to.
If you're going to.
And figure that out. Are you doing this by yourself? Are you doing this with a team? We don't know, so which one of those is better?
Well, I think they both have pros and cons. Yeah. I would say there's one thing that we did early on, which I think still applies, which is – know how long it's going to take you to make a thing.
Yes.
And make sure you have enough money to make two things.
Yeah.
Because your first thing – actually, there's a good chance that any of the things that you make will not pan out. But especially the first one because you
definitely the first one. Yeah. So, well, and we have mentioned before that the only reason that we're still making games and are still running a business is because of a handful over the past 7 years – there have been a handful of lucky breaks that we've had, without which there's a really good chance we wouldn't be running anymore. So, so you can't. It's not just a matter of and the way that we treated it though was the right way at the very beginning when Sam and I started. They said because they'd made enough games at that point, or that they knew we could make two games in 6 months, and we have 6 months of financial runway, right? So we have two chances to figure out how to do this and how to make it viable, and if we can't do it, then we would have given it our best shot.
That's that.
We just basically burned 6 months of our 60-year life runway, assuming that we all have heart attacks and die from our childhood of eating too much bacon or whatever.
That's my plan.
So it was a good childhood.
It was a good childhood. lots of bacon, lots of fireworks.
Iowa, what are you gonna do?
Yep. I was even going with that.
The fact that basically you need to get your 6 months of runway or get whatever runway is. So you got
distracted by the bacon. So you need that. You need that 6 months of runway.
It's the childhood crawled back.
But the idea is that you go into it knowing, like full well knowing, that the chances of you coming out on the other side of 6 months with a launched game that is financially successful, allowing you to continue, is very, very low. Almost nobody manages to do that. And that's independent of having a good game too, because it's just very hard to sell a game.
I mean, this is the same as if you said I'm gonna become a full time independent author.
It's any job career change.
Or starting a business. It's just starting a business.
It's all the same. Yeah.
Yep.
So I think there's one really
almost risky.
Yeah, there's one really good book that I've been actually I think I read a bit of through. I think Seth actually recommended it to me. But it's called Indie Game from Dream to Delivery, I think. And it's by, I can't remember the two authors, but one of them's done like a billion things. And then I think Rami's involved in some way.
Yeah.
And so in that book, so it's one of those rare books that like I, as far as getting started, and like if you're trying to answer this question of like how would you talk about getting started? Honestly, like that book, because what it does is it makes you answer a bunch of questions. Like every chapter is actually just starts with essentially you answering a ton of questions. Which again, as we talked about with pre-production stuff, it's like answer a bunch of these questions early so that you don't get surprised midstream. And that book does a really thorough job from the, I think I've read about half or three quarters of it by now. I just started it a couple weeks ago. It does a really good job of breaking down every single aspect and then making you answer questions specifically about each aspect and then providing advice after the fact, right? So like the whole idea is to have you answer the question first and then you read sort of the advice pages about like what to do. And so you can kind of adjust
the plan. And reevaluate.
Yeah. So I would recommend looking at something like that, to be honest, because we've talked about it.
And check out the personal MBA.
Yes.
Because phenomenal. If you are a full-time indie developer, then you're running a business. And if you aren't interested or know anything about business, then you're going to have a bad time. You know, if you go to like the game dev subreddit or various game developer communities, you get all of these people coming in talking about how they feel bad and weird about charging money for the thing that they've made, right? And this happens with artists mm-hmm. and authors and whatever is moving your frame of reference from it being like this, you know, you just like putting your soul out there and hopefully the universe just provides.
Right? So maybe that's the one piece of advice that we should that we can very squarely give without having to dedicate like a 10-year seminar right on the topic, which mm-hmm. Which is basically the piece of advice being understand and just internalize that what you're doing is starting a business.
Yes.
Yeah. That business is making and selling games. And treat that as now the project you're embarking on. The project you're embarking on is not making a game. That is not it at all. The project you're embarking on is creating a business that makes games to sell to somebody, right? Mm-hmm. So if you take it with that approach, then now you can actually go start finding the resources that you need, like the ones that Sam has already mentioned, to tackle that problem, because now you're solving the right problem. The right problem is, how do you successfully run a game business in the current environment that we're all living in? And with the tools that you and tools and resources that you have available to you right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cool. I think it's a good spot. All right. Next question comes from Retrophile TV. The one and only.
Speedrunner.
Retrophile says, it has recently come to light. There's an extremely pressing matter in the Levelhead community around whether or not the Blopfush is truly good or evil in their intent.
An intent?
It seems everyone has chosen a side in this ongoing debate. Where do you stand and why?
I want to talk about hard and soft edges.
We should also quickly talk about what a Blopfush is for anyone yes. who's not played Levelhead.
Those uninitiated, Blopfush is a flying fish sort of a creature. That just
flying fush.
Flying fush. That just sort of just flies around. It just moves back and forth. It's not aggressive at all. It's just chilling.
In fact, no AI. It doesn't attack you. It only moves if you put it on a path. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's that.
Yeah. And the whole sort of bit in the Bureau of Shipping is that they're originally designed to do these sort of flying airdrop missions, but eventually became corrupted because of a hack and got too attached to their messengers who they're partnered with. And so they ended up being rebranded as a companion robot, like a dog, except it's a weird hairdryer fish creature that flies in the air. So that's kind of the backstory as far as the Bureau is concerned, right? Now, here's how I feel about this question of, are they good? Are they maniacally evil and somehow secretly behind every bad thing that's ever happened in the, Butterscotch universe? I like having unresolved pieces. So I'm not going to answer this question either way, because it's showing up. So the fact that we ended up making that presentation about them actually being this companion robot was actually because we saw that for some reason, whether it's because they're so simple or whatever else, the community, as they're playing Levelhead, developed basically this joke about how everyone loves the Blopfush. The Blopfush is just like a really nice person, because Seth had put in a tooltip in, right? That was like, the Blopfush is just a real nice all around person.
Just a great person all around.
So, which is strange when you think about it, because they're not a person, right? So it's confusing, number one. Two, they were hacked. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what happened during that hack? But the general point is that we were able to like riff off of the community's take on that and general conspiracy theory to do something that actually integrated in the game. And what I meant with talking about hard and soft edges is there's this idea in artwork, in paint in particular, which is you need a balance of edges that are clearly defined and edges that are a little fuzzy in your picture. And actually, you don't want every single edge defined, because what ends up happening is that, you know, people who are involved with it can't – they don't get to fill in the gaps. There's no gaps at all, right? And so a picture that has every single line perfectly clear, like vector art, for example, in my case, has actually less – generally has a little bit less interest to it because of the fact that there's no ambiguity.
This is also if you watch a terrible movie, which just as a – random example, Independence Day 2, Vargas mm-hmm. Resurgence, or whatever it's called, where the main form of explaining the world to you is by just telling you just everything yep. about the world that you're in, right? So you just go from one monologue to another about what the world is so that you don't get the chance to discover for yourself or to try to figure out but never be sure, right, mm-hmm. why things are the way that they are, which – and as anybody who's like an avid sci-fi person will also know, the more you try to explain like a fun sci-fi thing, the more bullshitty and fake it becomes and yes. the harder to believe it is, because you just can't explain away magic, right? And you can't do it. And so if you want a thing to be fun and interesting and compelling, you want to find that balance of having just mm-hmm. enough information that somebody is interested and wants to know more and thinks there's like something interesting underneath, right? And then never, ever fill in the gap. Like we even may know what the gap is to like how we want it to be filled. But if we do that, we've actually ruined that part mm-hmm. of the thing.
So a retrophile, this is a long way of saying, I'm not telling you. I'm not saying a word about it. The Blobfish.
Long way of saying, that's a good question.
Quick question. Next.
All right. Last question of the episode comes from XX Hybrid XX.
This is clearly an Xbox gamer tag. Mm-hmm.
Who says, quite simply, who says, my girlfriend just broke up with me.
It's terrible.
What in the fuck do I do now?
I want to say I love the sincerity. You know?
What in the fuck do I do now?
I think.
And also I like how we actually don't know when this question was asked because
they have been months ago. They probably already figured out what to do.
They probably already figured it out.
So let's assume that this probably was a while ago. So what do they do now? A while after the
now.
Breakup.
You know? I think immediately after the breakup, don't do anything.
Just chill out. You know? That's fine.
Well, I think actually the fact of asking this question means that the thing you need to be doing is focusing on yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. It's now like we don't know anything. We don't know any of the specifics about what happened or why things happened.
Cetera, good generic right? so advice.
We can't get into that. But the generic advice is if you find yourself finding yourself like in a vacuum, being like, I feel I don't know what to do, right? That means that your what to do is defined by something external.
Mm-hmm. You know? And maybe that external thing's gone now.
You gotta bring that inside mm-hmm. so that you know what to do, you know. But it's gonna require I don't know, going on a spiritual journey.
Yes.
Of smoking yes. some peyote. Do you smoke peyote? I don't know, you just peyote.
You do some of it.
Like really kind of sage but generic advice to doing peyote.
Just do get
well. The thing is, there's no way like we can't just tell you how to explore yourself and get into your own head and mm-hmm. you know I don't like there's not a step to do that. But what you can do is go smoke some peyote if that's a smokable thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you shouldn't because that's illegal. Probably
don't be doing any of this.
I don't even know what it is.
I don't even know what it is. I think it's a cactus.
It's not good advice.
It's cactus maybe. Yeah, don't follow that
it's
advice.
It's a cactus. I don't know.
But that is advice that is
you could
it is a thing that one can do, right? Which mm-hmm. is which was sort of my goal there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we got that covered. We got the generic advice, we got the specific action. I think we got it.
Yeah, I agree. I think you just move on and just work on your own thing for a while. Yep. It's okay.
It's totally fine. There's going
to
be
enjoy life. Think about the things that you've always wanted to do. Maybe you didn't have time. You got a little bit more time now. Do those things for a while. It's okay. And you know, maybe another person will come along while you're in the middle of something else.
Yep. That's the thing.
But I think importantly, you got to be in the middle of something else, before somebody can come along in the middle of
something else. That's true.
You know,
it's another good sage.
Yeah. So don't just do nothing. Just move on, do some stuff, and there'll be people there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe one of them will be your new girlfriend at some point.
There you go.
It's hard to say, you know.
Then maybe not. So, remember,
also maybe
everyone's just people. You know? So don't treat everybody as a future girlfriend. They're just
I think that's something I want to say that's serious, which is to go on with your life not in the aim of trying to find the next girlfriend. That's not your goal. Your goal should just be to go on and enjoy life, right? Go on, enjoy, do things that you want to do, learn things that you want to learn, participate in the world.
Become more amazing, you know?
Yeah. And good things just come out of that. And that's just how that works. Mm-hmm. So
I will say I met my now wife after my previous breakup when I was like, I'm going to do a hip hop dance like routine in school in front of a couple thousand people. I'm going to do that.
Why? Because why the hell not?
I don't have a girlfriend. I got time. Well, no, actually, it was the sort of thing where I was like, I don't want to going back to what you're saying, Seth, where it's like I just didn't want to date anyone. And I was like, I'm just going to go have fun and like do some weird stuff. And then voila, you know, things happen. So
it turns out you meet like-minded people who are also just there to have fun doing weird stuff. Yep.
Yeah,
and then you make friends. Yeah, so just do that. So, all right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Sorry about the audio blip, but you know, at least we recovered the episode, so we're good. Mm-hmm. We'd like to thank our producers Fat Bard and Jen Coster for putting the podcast together, and thanks to our community moderators to keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. We have links to everything you could ever want out of life.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.